Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Welcome to a brand new Hot Spurs podcast. It is Tuesday the 19th of May 2020. I am Steve from Leon C and Essex, and today for my Spurs journey we've got Lee McQueen. How you doing, Lee?
Very well, Steve. Thanks for having me on. I'm very excited to go through my Spurs journey with you. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, before we do that, obviously we do the review of the season. Last game was obviously on Sunday. Finished fourth again, no trophy. But oh, hang on, no, I've read last. This is last year's script. What's going on?
That'd be quite good if we can get a top four out of it, Steve. To be fair.
Well, anyway, look, mate. We'll start from the very beginning. We are a Spurs podcast. All we do is talk about football, and
sure.
I do also listen to the Arsenal podcast, so you don't have to.
That's good. In terms
of Lee, you do another podcast. Which one is that?
We do. So Last Word on Spurs. Been doing that now with Ricky and Jason, John and Chris and Jamie now for the last couple of years. Thoroughly enjoyed it, Steve, to be fair. It's been brilliant. I think Rick does a fantastic work ethic to behind the scenes. You all know by running a podcast, it's not just rock up and just record something for half an hour and crack on. And there's a lot of work that goes into the scenes in terms of researching and working hard and all that sort of stuff. And he does that on top of working full time, like most of you guys do. So he does a brilliant job and thoroughly enjoyed it over the last couple of years, for sure.
No, I mean, don't put me in the same bracket as Ricky, because Ricky does all the research. He gets all his questions ready. I just like phone up the person I know who's agreed to do the pod and ask random questions.
Let's do it. Let's get into that random question stuff.
Let's do it. Right. So let's just very quickly, obviously we did the regular podcast, and then Colin's son went and played for Rangers. He's still there. He's been fantastic. So past guests, starting from 31st of March, we had Martin Cloak, we had Jason, the Oracle McGovern, Ricky from the Last Word on Spurs, we've had Crackers, my best mate Simon Dugan, who Lee knows.
I do know Simon, yeah. I hope you're listening to this one, Simon.
He will
hope you
do,
well,
and his son. We've had Flav from the Fighting Cock, Colin, David the Spurs Poet, Carl Gwillam, Andy Goldberg, we had Jack from Echoes of Glory podcast, my son was on, we had Dan Tracy, Anthony Costa from Blue, Lee, one of
nice,
your favourite bands.
Yeah, for sure. I know Anthony quite well, so through the podcast and stuff, through Last Word on Spurs. So I hope you keep him well, buddy.
He was brilliant. We had a bit of back and forth over trophy versus top four, but you know, we'll discuss that later. Mickey on. Mickey was last week. Mickey Hazard,
legend.
And we had little Junior Dugs, Simon Dugan's son, was the last one. So now we've got you, Lee, and then on Friday I've got Julie Welsh, who's of course wrote Glory Days film, so I'm really looking forward to chatting to her, and we've got some others lined up as well, so we're looking forward to that. Right, Lee, ready for the questions?
I'm ready for it, Steve. Let's throw what you got at me.
Who is your favourite football club?
It's a tough one. This is a real, really tough one. There's a few. No, of course, Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. Always been my favourite club from a young age. Actually, in actual fact, it's quite interesting. I say always. I was actually a QPR fan probably for a year or so. When I started getting into football back in the day, maybe 7 or 8 years old, something around that time is from memory. One of my best mates' dad used to be the groundsman at Loftus Road. And it was a time where some of the our older listeners will remember when they had the artificial pitch. I think Queen's Park Rangers was one of the only clubs at the time, top division club, to have an artificial pitch.
Yes.
And Nick's...
Them and Luton.
Yeah, and Luton as well. Yeah, of course. Yeah, good memory, of course. Yeah. So Nick's dad was one of the groundsmen over at Loftus Road. And funny enough, they used to train in an Irish social club that my best mate's house backed onto. So we could go above Steph's fence and have a look, and we'd see QPR players training. So it was quite a unique thing. So it was kind of inevitable that we liked QPR. But there was nothing really like in the mid-80s I'm talking about here. So there's nothing really like watching Tottenham Hotspur, the flow of Hoddle and Waddle and you know, the types of players that we had back then. And I suppose I fell in love with Tottenham in a kind of perverse sort of way, really, because I had a money box. I remember this for sure. I had a money box. It was a football boot, and it was a blue and white football boot, and it had a Queen's Park Rangers badge on the front. And I watched a FA Cup final, 1987, Coventry versus Tottenham, and obviously we lost. I found myself crying, and that was instantly me, a Tottenham fan, and I peeled off the QPR badge from this football boot's money box, and I replaced it with a Tottenham Hotspur cockerel, and been Tottenham ever since. So that's the kind of little backstory for me being a Spurs fan.
Wow. So you were... Now, your handle on Skype is 77. Is that because you were born in 77?
Yes. Yeah, right? 77. So yeah. I was 10 years before, really.
So
yeah.
You were 10. I was at that game.
Was you?
One of my first games. Actually, the first game I ever went to that I remember really clearly was actually in 86 against Coventry again. We lost to Coventry. Alan Brazil and Cyril Regis played. Anyway, did you watch the... Because I never watched the game. Did you watch it on TV last week?
What game?
That game, the cup final. Because it was...
I didn't know it was on, actually.
Yeah, it was on ITV on last Saturday.
Oh, no. That would have been good to watch.
Yeah. Do you know what was funny? It was a classic Tottenham performance, because we, by far the better side. We had brilliant players. I mean, think about this midfield. Ardiles, Waddle and Hoddle, all in the same
amazing
side, right? Clive Allen up front, who'd scored 48 goals, and then he's got his 49th.
So Mabs at the back, wasn't it?
Brilliant. And we pulverised them, but of course we lost. I mean, how Spursy is that, of course?
I know. And I think that's one of the... that's why I said perverse decision, really. I think that was one of the reasons what made me want to support them. Sometimes you don't choose your club, do you? Sometimes a club chooses you. Do you see what I mean?
Have you listened to Mickey Hazard's podcast with me?
I didn't know.
That's exactly what he said.
Oh, that's bizarre. And I do agree with that. Where I grew up in a place called South Ruislip, right, which is the end of the central line. Not the Essex side, the other side. So, you guys from Essex, I'm from the other end of the line. So you've got Epping one side, you've got West Ruislip the other. I'm the West Ruislip side. So we're northwest London, but we're still, around the North Cirque, you're still probably looking on a decent day, you're still looking probably half an hour to get to the ground from where we are. So they're not like the most local team, whereas actually it's like a 10-minute drive down to Loftus Road, for example. So it's not a local team, but that's what I mean. Sometimes your team just grabs you rather than the other way around. I suppose it also helped that my childhood friends like Darren Wood, he was Tottenham, Stefan Dias, he's Tottenham, he's and Nick as well, like they're all Spurs as well. So you just kind of end up growing up, Damien, all being Tottenham. So it's just how it come about, really.
It is weird. I mean, I went to uni in 1994. Walked into a club with a
long time ago. That Steve, long time ago. That
walked into a club, right, with a couple of lads. I was in halls of residence with. I don't know who they were, but just bumped into a fella, and he said, "Yeah, my name's Simon." He wasn't interested in talking to me whatsoever. He was looking around for birds. You know how it is back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
If I can still use that term. I got my wallet out to get a beer, and he went, "Oh, you're a Spurs fan." And I went, yeah. And he went, oh, me too. And I went, all right, nice one. Turned out to be Simon Dugan, who years later you had a bit of business with. Amazing.
Yeah, amazing. Again, that's the power of football or power community. It's really weird, actually. You mentioned that you've had Martin Cloak on doing this very show.
Yeah.
Top man, Martin. I've only met him a couple of times, but talked to him via Twitter, and when we've seen each other, and when Spurs were playing at Wembley and stuff like that. He's a top man. If you get some more time with Martin, he's just the knowledge of the game is outstanding.
Off and be friends with Martin, is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying Sack Doogie off, but what I'm saying is that just the power of football to bring people together is it's very powerful. And actually, just on that theme, so two of my best mates that they've got parents to my children and all that sort of stuff are Nick and Colsey. And I met Nick and Colsey during a tour of Portugal in 2004. So me and my friend, me and Kitch, my man Kitch, we went over. He got a ballot. In the Euro 2004 championships, you could get enter a ballot and get some tickets for the championships.
Yeah.
And Kitch entered, and we ended up getting tickets for. Yeah, it was in Portugal. Yeah. So we travelled across to Portugal, and we said, right, we're going to have 2 weeks over here, just the lads. We're going to go to a few of the games, and hopefully, if England get through to the quarterfinals, then we'll be able to follow England, because we got group match tickets that was the France side, not the England side. But anyway, we met these guys in the square, as you do, and they're all on the super box, which is very strong lager, and it's gets you more drunk than Stella Artois, by the way, if you don't know the song. But we was drinking a few super box, and we met these guys, and I sort of said, you don't know anyone, lads, do you? They've got any spare tickets for the England game? And this guy said, yeah, I've got two spare tickets. Wow. I was like, seriously? He's like, yeah. He said, so, we've done a deal. I think he ripped me off, to be fair, but we've done a deal. And he said, oh, why don't you stay for a beer? So we bought these two tickets. So I'm going to stay for a beer. And them two lads that from that day, both Spurs fans, that's why it's relevant, because they're both Spurs, so we hit off straight away.
Yeah.
And they're the godparents to my children.
Wow.
And that was back in 2004. So again, the power of football to bring people together. They're top guys, the people that we're speaking about. And yeah, just amazing that all of that come around from supporting the wonderful club that we all do, which is Tottenham Hotspur.
Brilliant. Now, what is your favourite country?
That is an interesting one. I will never live in another country than England. So from that very answer, you probably would say England. Lucky enough to follow England and Tottenham in different countries and visit different countries and so on and so forth. So followed closely behind England, I would probably have to say Thailand.
Yes. Okay. Is that because Jace's... convinced you?
No, but I mean, Jace has a massive influence, of course. But no, I just think, back in, you was talking about before when you guys at uni and whatever, when I first got together with my now wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, we took a year out. Either of us didn't go uni, but we took a year out and we went traveling. And during that time, we visited amazing places, India, Nepal, Thailand, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand. Lots of people listening to this would have done similar sorts of trips and stuff. I just think at the time, I was 21 years old, made a load of, a relatively quick load of money in recruitment, selling some recruitment stuff at the beginning. And then I just thought, come, let's go spend some money. So we did for a year. And we'd done backpacking and all that sort of stuff. It was on a budget, don't get me wrong, but it was just brilliant. We couldn't leave Thailand. We was only budgeted there to go there for a month, and we ended up spending 3.5 months there because we just couldn't leave. It was just amazing.
I've never been there, so I'd like to go.
Is a fantastic place, Steve, I have to say.
Did you eat any weird foods when you were over there?
No, I mean, I think the food is one of the attractions, because it is just incredible. The taste, not weird stuff, but I'm quite a fussy eater, to be fair. So, but yeah, I mean, some of the stuff, normal stuff that you would go Thai green curry or beef and oyster sauce and
pak choy, like that sort of stuff. Like that.
No, I'm not eating no snake, mate. It's not. No, that's not. Ask Jace, he's probably eating snake.
What football player do you hate the most?
Oh man! But immediately when you said that, it was Jack Wilshere. Comes straight into my head.
Right, there's a reason, Lee. Just to let the listeners know, me and Lee have been a little bit of tweet back and forth. What's it all about? What the questions are? I don't tell people the questions because I want it to be instinctive. And there you go. Instinctive. Yeah, the name that pops in your head, Jack Wilshere.
Yeah, so it was Jack Wilshere is the name that popped in my head, but then you give it a little bit more thought and you just think there's some players out there that just noggled you. I mean, Henri, you could say, but you have to respect how good he was. So therefore, I don't hate him for that. I think, again, just thinking about things that riled me so much, Martin Keown, when he done what he did, it was nothing to do with our club, but that famous game when Van Nistelrooy missed the penalty and they were up in his face and they were all aggressive and I didn't like that sort of stuff. And he obviously played for the Arsenal as well.
A year later, someone broke an Arsenal player's leg and all the Arsenal fans and everyone went, "Oh, you're too hard on us." And they all forgot that they'd had 10, 20 years of being hard so-and-sos, and they had a couple of players that broke their leg, and then for the last 10-15 years they've been the wimps of the Premier League, and long may it continue, because I don't think they still remember that they used to be hard so-and-sos, and that's when we used to hate them the most.
I think that's what sums up Jack Wilshere in a way. Like, we don't know him personally, but just from a pitch perspective. But the overriding factor has to be Sol Campbell. I mean, what that guy did is, well, it's just unforgivable, isn't it? You just can't do that. He didn't even go for a fee, Steve. He let his contract run down and go for free. I mean, it is just literally the ultimate betrayal. So, spring to mind Jack Wilshere, when you think about it, it's got to be Sol Campbell.
Okay, and what team do you hate the most?
This is an interesting question, because
it's not difficult for me.
Obviously,
it's
the first one.
It's not difficult for me, no, but go on.
No, I know, and it won't be difficult for a lot of Spurs fans, but the initial is Arsenal. But I have to say, I absolutely loathe Chelsea. I cannot stand them. And I think, in recent history, the most recent history, the more, I suppose, rivalry between that triangle of clubs, if you like, has actually been more Chelsea-Tottenham or Tottenham-Chelsea than it has Tottenham-Arsenal. And I think a couple of reasons for that. I think under the Pochettino era, we blew Arsenal away. They weren't going to, come and stamp all over us. We finished above them four times in the league on the trot, taking their top four berth, which is fantastic, ruining them, the fact that they can't get 50 million quid for Champions League football every season because we've taken it. So it's been like a double whammy for them. But I think with Chelsea, they've been almost our bogey side, keep coming up against them in semi-finals, keep making the same mistakes, beating us in them semi-finals, beating us to the league title in 16-17 season when, we were arguably playing the best football that we've seen, certainly in the modern era. So I think for me, the obvious answer is Arsenal, but I do absolutely love Chelsea. And my father-in-law's a Chelsea season ticket holder as well, which always makes it for good banter.
The list goes on, mate. I said on a couple of previous shows that if you had the time and inclination to do it, you could list probably 20 things in the last 5 years where Chelsea have got one over on us. And it's things like, the ghost goal in the semi-final when we were coming
for
back.
Sure.
The Frank Lampard ghost goal again, with Gomez never went over the line. Of course, the Champions League, the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, classic. We qualified for the first
Arneson,
time.
When he had a brilliant recruit.
William as well, Nick and William. Yeah. Like, that's why they're talking about him coming back now. I'm like, why would we want to welcome William? Because the way he treated us before, he just snubbed us blatantly, had a medical, and now he went to Chelsea, and now he wants to come back after 8 years. It's like, but I'm not a fan of that. So,
I'd have him.
Yeah, there's... again, I think it's the moral thing. Sometimes, it's the moral high ground for me, but, the reality is that yes, it's either going to be Chelsea or Arsenal, to be fair.
All right, mate. And what is your favourite ever player? Or rather, who? I'm a teacher. Who is your favourite ever player?
Oh, man. Favourite ever. I can't answer that without kind of giving some of the reasons. And I'm probably going to say the people that I saw live. I mean, during the 90s, for me, I had a picture of this handsome devil on my wall, which is David Ginola. And I think he was a game changer. Yeah, Doogie. No, Doogie's in there. He's in there somewhere. I think he's in the album somewhere. But David Ginola, I had a signed picture of him, whatever, on my wall. And I don't care. He was a good looking guy. And man, what a fantastic player.
All right. So let me ask you a question.
That guy is.
So you've got David Ginola. Who's next to David Ginola? Good looking. So you've got obviously a female that would be there as well. Who would that be?
What, a female player?
No, on your wall. Who was the poster? Come on.
Oh, the poster? Oh, on my wall. I know, it's just David.
Okay,
I didn't have anything else. It was David Ginola.
Other players, right, I know.
Other players, I mean, I can't say favourite ever player without talking about Gareth Bale. I mean, to see the guy live, to see what he did with football, that last season, the 2012-2013 season that he played for us, he was unplayable. Guy was absolutely unplayable for us, absolutely amazing. I mean, we've got unbelievable legends, and you've had some of these on your own show. You talked about Mickey Hazard and stuff, but I never saw them play live, so I wouldn't put that in. I think in the modern era, the people that we've got, I mean, we've got one now, and I'm not sure he's as appreciated as he should be, certainly from the wider media. But Harry Kane, I mean, this guy is absolute world class, in my opinion. Best number nine in the world. You take out Ronaldo and Messi from that, but because they're not pure number nines. But this guy is the best number nine on the planet for me. So, you know, for me, it has to be the Canes, has to be the Bales. You know, I've mentioned that David to get your. I like players that get yourself off a seat, but I also like defending because I was a defender myself. Not that I can play football at all, so don't ever try and look me up in any archives, so I won't be there. But yeah, I like defending, and I like people that can defend. Ledley King, you know, some of the challenges that he made, he defied belief. You know, he had well documented with his dodgy injuries and stuff like that. But you know, absolutely fantastic player. And then you've got players that have got from a different era. You know, the Glenn Hoddles, best passer of the ball probably ever in the game. Lucky enough for us, he's an absolute Tottenham legend
you're answering now the next five questions, so.
Oh, sorry, buddy. Sorry, yeah. So I would probably go Kane, but just because he's one of our own as well, purely one of our own.
Lee McQueen chooses Kane as his favourite ever player. Well done. I think I agree. Who's your favourite manager?
Mad. I've seen a lot of talk today about Bilnik and what he achieved at the club. And I can't really comment. It was before my era. So under my era, we've had a lot of managers, to be fair. I mean, my ex-boss used to own the football club, as you guys will know, for 10 years. And we went for a few managers under Lord Sugar. And we've been for a few more under Daniel Levy and an Inks rake. So... But favourite manager, I mean, I just talked to him about a player, Glenn Hoddle. He had a couple of years stint. I think he was before his time. And I think that in a different era, he would have, a few years after that, maybe he would have done better at Tottenham with different era of players. But it has to be Pochettino. I can't say anything other than that. What that guy achieved with a self-imposed transfer ban, one League Cup final, semi-finals in the FA Cup consistently, top four finishes consistently, would only ever qualify for the Champions League. This is what listeners need to remember this, right? We only qualified for the Champions League once before in our entire history of the Champions League being open before Pochettino coming to our club. Once. He never spent money. His net spends were documented, 39 million or whatever it was over two seasons or three seasons. He got the best out of youngsters. He started blooding our own. We talked about Harry Kane, one of our own, Harry Winks, Ryan Mason, KWP, Oliver Skip, you know, all of these players, you know, that have come through the academy system under the Pochettino reign. So I loved Harry Redknapp. I thought Harry Redknapp, what Harry did was outstanding. We're going to have a go, lads. Come on, lads. We're going to go out there. We're going to have a go and play, you know, at times swashbuckling football, which we loved. But Pochettino for me. And hopefully, Jose Mourinho will top that over the next kind of couple of seasons or so. But at the moment, it's Poch.
Did you watch the Harry Redknapp thing last night with the ex-England players?
I didn't actually know. Was it on the... I have to get that on demand or something. What was that about?
Well, it's on ITV. You know...
cool.
Do you know what's fascinating about it? It's not really about football. It's about ex-players and what they get up to. So you have someone like Lee Sharp going, well, I haven't kicked a ball for a year. Because they did the same last year. Do you remember the programme was on last year and they played against Germany at Leyton Orient And
and
the lads got together. And Lee Sharp's there. You know, Lee Sharp isn't an old man. Lee Sharp's in his probably our age.
Yeah, he must be our sort of age, isn't he? Must be our age.
And he's saying, I haven't kicked a ball for a year. And you're thinking, well, I know I'm teaching that, do PE, but I also kick a ball in the garden. But he's literally not kicked a ball for a year. And then you've got the other players and all the other things that they go through. And, you know, the biggest story of the whole thing is Neil Ruddock and you know, the size of the guy. And it's fascinating. But the point is about Harry Redknapp, and he's there going... it's a TV show, but you can see him going, I want these lads to be fit, I want these guys to win, I want these guys to be great. And yeah, I just think that someone like him, when he came to Spurs, just wanted he's so into football. It wasn't just like, oh, I'll take that job and I'll make a lot of money
he's part of the game, isn't he?
Job because he thought, I'm gonna do something here. I'm gonna enjoy this.
Do you know what, Steve? He did, and you know that's what I mentioned him. You know, you're talking about, you know, step changes in Tottenham for over the last kind of 10 years, and Harry's a massive part of that. Of 10-12 years or so, he's a huge part of that. Martin Jarl, a massive part of that. Big Martin, brilliant guy, loved by the players, fantastic manager. I mean, last World in Spurs, just done a pod with Tom Huddleston actually, and some of the insight he gave to working under Martin was fantastic. And during that period of time, I mean, that was the last time, not under Martin, it was under essentially under Juan de Ramos at the time, wasn't it? But that transitional period, that's the last time we won a trophy. It's madness to think that all the listeners that are listening to this now, we haven't won a trophy for that long. Like, it's wrong. Like, it is, you know, the talented players that we had throughout. I mean, we had Berbatov, Keane, Jermaine Genius, we had Bent coming through, you know, we had Pavlochenko, we had Van der Vaart, we had Gareth Bale, we had some epic players. Ledley King, we've already talked about. To win one trophy out of that over the past, whatever it is, 10, 11, 12 years or whatever, yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. That's got to change. Surely that's got to change.
Well, we've done all right. And let's not get into it now, but I think we've done all right. I think finishing in the top four is something that we as a football club, you can do whatever you want. I personally have celebrated. I've danced around the front room. I danced around the front room last year when Xhaka pulled the Brighton player back and they scored. And at the end of the game, that meant that we definitely finished in the top four. Sorry, but I celebrated. Great. And started with Crouchy scoring the goal, and everyone's watching that game again. And I think that the fact that we don't say, do you know what, finishing above Arsenal and finishing in that top four, getting into the Champions League, is not as good. Don't get this wrong. It's not as good as winning the League Cup. It's not as good as winning the FA Cup. It's certainly not as good as winning the League or the Champions League, right? I think it's still brilliant, and I've really enjoyed it. And the fact that we just dismiss all of that, as if to say, no, the last, 12 years has been a non-event, is absolute nonsense. Because
I've thoroughly enjoyed
the last 5 years in particular. And don't tell me that it's been rubbish and because we haven't won a trophy, because I have had a great time over the last 5 years.
And I agree with that. You know, I think, you know, the last 12 years is almost criminal. I'm not saying that the last 12 years have been irrelevant because we haven't won a trophy. I think it's almost been criminal that we haven't won one because we've been that good. And actually, the you know, I've just selected my favourite ever player at Tottenham's Harry Kane. You know, he still plays for the club now. My favourite manager is Pochettino, and that's the last kind of five and a half years of his tenure. So I like you, I agree. I thoroughly enjoyed what we've been doing, the emotion, the belief. Now, what Pochettino did during his reign is he made us all of us, proud of our football club again. If some of us wasn't, you know, then we definitely was or are now after the Poch.
Winning week in, week out has been enjoyable for me, because when we won the trophies, we lost every Saturday. All right, we won on the Wednesday in the cup game, but we lost every Saturday.
Again, and I agree. I was just about to say, you know, and that pride turned into belief, and that belief started. We started to believe that actually we could go and do some stuff here. You know, we had two title challenges, you know, three semi-finals, a League Cup final, and a final in the Champions League under the Pochettino era. We didn't win a trophy, but we qualified four times for the Champions League, finishing above Arsenal, and all of them things that we just talked about. People say I'm an idiot for saying this, but you know. We're not entitled. You know, when you look back at Tottenham's history, you've won the title, the top league division title twice in our entire history of our football club. So we're not entitled to go and win the title or the Premier League. And actually, there's only four trophies that you can win every single season. And then when you've got the likes of the big money, the money makers, such as the Man Cities and the Chelseas notoriously have been there. And then you've got the Man Uniteds and the Arsenals that have got the history behind them. And then you've got the, you know, the Liverpool as well, they've got the history behind them. And then you're coming up against powerhouses of European football week in, week out in the Champions League. For us to be where we are and what we've done as a football club, you know, when you look at the whole context, I think it's been absolutely phenomenal. And you look back on some of the key moments, which you mentioned earlier, Steve, about Spursy, or you know, could be a bit Spursy. You mentioned some of the key moments. You know, if we'd have scored that goal, I think it was Dele Alli, or it might have been Eric Dier actually. If we'd have scored that goal against Man United in the semi-final a couple of years ago, and we'd have gone in 2-0 up rather than 1-0 up, would that have made a difference? You know, that's a key moment. You know, if we hadn't have played Sonny as a left back, or you know, is that a key moment? You know, if we hadn't eaten the lasagna, you know, would we have qualified for the Champions League rather than having food poison on that day, that fateful day back in 2005? You know, yeah, there's always something, you know. So yeah. You know, I do agree. There's always, and that's the Spursy thing, is there's always something. At one time we will break the hoodoo. Yeah. And once we break the hoodoo, I think they come flooding in. And, cool. and actually, regardless of what I've just said about Pochettino, because I absolutely love Poch and what he's done, and just for the record, I'd have stuck with him. If I was a chairman, I'd have stuck with him. But I'm not the chairman, thank goodness for all of the listeners. I'm not the chairman. And actually, he made that decision, and now we've got Jose in, who is arguably one of the best managers ever to manage in our game. So, you know, we've got the best stadium in the world, best training facilities in the world, we've got world-class players, we've got world-class manager. We've had this break now that has almost allowed us to press the reset button in a horrible situation, don't get me wrong, but it is what it is. We've pressed the reset button. Then, you know, we could go on and achieve something. And I'm reading now of all the reports that Luis Campo might be coming, a match made in heaven and all that sort of stuff. So let's see what happens over the next kind of couple of seasons. But, you know, for me, like you say, yes, we haven't won a trophy, and it is important to win trophies for sure. But we've had a fantastic ride for the last 6-7 years or so, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, two things just on those. First of all, the word you said, if we did that. And you know, one of my bugbears is when people say, oh, you can't say if my grandmother was my uncle, or that, you know, that catchphrase they use. No, conversation is built on ifs. So when you're having a conversation with someone, you say, well, if we did that, then you go, yeah, and you've built on that conversation. One of my bugbears is people say, well, you can't say ifs and buts. Well, you know, you can have say ifs and buts, because it's part of conversation. Just to add to the list, if going back to his very first cup final, the League Cup, Ericsson hit the bar, if you remember, against Chelsea. Within the first 20 minutes, Ericsson hit the bar, and then Chelsea won with two deflected goals. John Terry and Costa. Again, you know, these little slices of luck. And I was listening today to an Arsenal podcast, so you don't have to. And they were talking about how, A, Arsenal won several trophies through luck. But if you think about 99, possibly the greatest year in an English team's history, when Man United won the treble. That should have been Arsenal. Because not winning the treble, but certainly winning the double. Because the FA Cup, Bergkamp missed a penalty. in the last minute. Do you remember Schmeichel's?
Yeah.
Right. They apparently in the there was another league game where Arsenal should have won it, and they something happened, some random event, a referee decision or whatever. And of course the Bayern Munich game, they should have never won that. I mean, Bayern Munich were all over them. And you think about progressing from that, the Bayern Munich against Chelsea. I mean, Bayern Munich absolutely stuffed Chelsea that day, and they won the European Cup through sheer luck. So yes, we got luck against Man City. Yes, we got luck against Ajax, and we got no luck, of course, against Liverpool in the final. And these are the little tweaks and
little things.
That it's going to happen, Ian. It's going to happen
for sure. Every elite sport person will tell you, anyone that's played at elite level, whatever it is, you know, whether or not it's sport, whether or not it's business, whatever, you need the bit of luck. Everyone says the same thing, you know. And you know, Liverpool got the bit of luck they needed in the Champions League final. And we were going into that final, we were going in there with Kane. Should he play? Should he not play? For me, he should. He's the best striker, number 9 in the world. I've already said that on this very pod earlier in our conversation. So he starts. If he's fit, he starts. And, you know, that might be harsh on Lucas Moura, but, you know, play Lucas in the same team if you want and drop somebody else. But the reality is that, for me, Kane should have started. But we didn't get the luck, and Liverpool did. If we'd have gone 1-0 up in that game within the first, whatever it was, 45 seconds, I was in the stadium, and it was absolutely mind-blowing. You know, the atmosphere, it was fantastic. The players coming out on the pitch. Within 40 seconds, the first thing, I just turned to the guy I was standing next to, and I just went, mate. And he, do you know what he said to me? He went, Spursy. I mean, you couldn't make it up. Like, our biggest game in our history in our modern history, maybe even in our entire history, and we've gone 1-0 down or given away a penalty within 40 seconds. I mean, that is the element of luck. It wasn't even a penalty, if we want to get into that debate. Clearly it wasn't. But the reality is we could never get there. Clearly not. But, you know, we could never get the kind of blow the cobwebs off after that. Do you know what I mean? It was thing. And I made a comment on Twitter a couple of weeks ago when it was the anniversary of the Ajax game, of which I was in Amsterdam for. I didn't get a ticket for the game, but I was in Amsterdam to watch it. And it was absolutely incredible. One of the best memories ever. And I made a comment on Twitter about, you know, we shouldn't have celebrated in that way. You know, we celebrated it as a final win. And I didn't get abused, but I got a few people saying I strongly disagree, and this is why we should be. But what I actually meant was, I think it was one of the reasons why we lost the final as players and as the management team, not as fans. Fans, we should be. But actually, when you look at these hard mentality winners, like a Jose, like a Sir Alex Ferguson, like, you know, the people that have worked, Pep Guardiola's, you wouldn't have seen them in the same emotional reaction as what we did with our players and with Pochettino. And I just think that's a learning curve. Mm. And I'm not condemning Poch for that at all. But what I'm saying is that actually we probably felt subconsciously as players, not as fans, as players in the team, that we'd achieved what we wanted to, which was to get to a Champions League final. Yeah. And therefore, we didn't really have the belief to go on and win it. Whereas actually, the belief starts from, sometimes starts from reactions. I don't know if I'm articulating myself really well, but actually I've read enough books to understand and been in situations and studied enough kind of business management and, you know, elite leaders to see and know that actually the job's not done until it's done. And that's the point I was making, I think.
Who is your legendary player?
So somebody maybe that's made the most, been the most influence on Tottenham for me, and what, you know, taking us to a kind of a different level. When you watch some of the footage back, and again, I was never lucky enough to see the guy play live, but I mean, Glenn Hoddle, what he could do with a football. You know, I mentioned swashbuckling earlier under Harry Redknapp, but for Glenn, he had the kind of shirt untucked, didn't he? And he just rocked up, and he wasn't a maverick. I don't want to say he was a maverick, but he just knew the game. He knew where to pass the ball. He knew he was probably 2 yards in his mind in front of everybody else. And for me, that made him an absolutely wonderful footballer, as a legend of the game at Tottenham Hotspur. The amount of appearances that he made for us, trophies that he won, the influence he had on the team, he is actually a true legend. So for me, it'd be Glenn.
Who is your favourite ever goalkeeper?
Interesting question. I met Pat Jennings.
As you can tell, Lee, I'm trying to rattle through these now because we've got a few to go and we've had a
great... Oh, sorry, round. Mate. That's just me talking. That's me talking. So, I'll do some one-word answers. I met Pat Jennings a couple of months back, actually in November. Lovely, top man, top guy, and some of the saves that he made on again footage. So, but I do like Paul Robinson for the fact that we used to sing England's number one, and he scored two goals, one against Watford for Tottenham. So, yeah, he's a bit of a ledge.
Who is your favourite ever defender?
Ledley King, but I have to say I have to have a quick mention to Stephen Carr and also to Carl Walker. I'll probably say that during Carl Walker's time at the club, he was my favourite Tottenham player. I was absolutely gutted to see him go to Man City, but as an all-round footballer and utter legend at Spurs, it's, you know, from start to finish, from the academy through his whole career, Ledley King.
Do you want to have a 30-minute debate about why you're wrong about Carl Walker?
No, because I'm totally right.
Who's your favourite midfielder?
Well, I talked earlier about David Ginola, didn't I? I don't know whether we can class Bale as a midfielder, or is he a defender, or is he a striker, or was he a forward player? I don't know. I mean, I absolutely love watching Sonny. Some would debate he's a striker, and some would debate he's a forward player, and some would debate he's a, you know, left-sided midfield player. But, you know, my favourite midfield player, if in terms of central midfield, was Moussa Dembélé. I think he was absolutely outstanding. I think he was. Maybe not with Spurs fans, but I think he was underrated. I think people judged him based on his goals and assists, which wouldn't be very complimentary to Moussa. But what he could do on a football, or what he wouldn't let other people do when he had the ball, was outrageous. I thought he was amazing. I think that's one of the reasons when we sold him to China, the Chinese club, in that January, that was a real bit of a faux pas from Tottenham, because we missed him, and we missed his influence in big games. I remember coming up to that, that's quickly on Moussa, coming up to that season, coming up to the running games, I think we had Man City, Man United and Liverpool, I think, on the trot, we were playing game after game, and there was a big debate at the time, was, like, can Moussa Dembélé play all them games and this, that and the other, and he did, and he was absolutely influential in us getting results in all of them games. I thought he was an outstanding player.
What I've always said about Moussa Dembélé is that, do you remember the Brian Clough quote when he said it takes 3 seconds to score a goal?
Yes.
So in a game that's, say, 3-1, right? So 3 seconds, that's quick maths, 12 seconds of a game, right? to score a goal, right? So, and in the build-up, you've probably got a few more seconds. So actually scoring goals in a game that's 3 or 2-1 or whatever is about, say, a minute of time.
Yeah.
Okay. For the rest of that 89 minutes, you're watching Moussa Dembélé. So although he didn't create very much, although he didn't score very much, the entire rest of the game, you're just give the ball to Moussa, and the stuff he used to do throughout the entire rest of the game. And I used to sit there, and I've said this many times, I used to sit there and watch him, and he'd get the ball and he'd glide past whoever it was, Jack Wilshere a lot of the times, Frank Lampard, whoever else was the midfielder, maybe glide past another one, pass it back, get the ball back, pass it on again, and then it'd go out for a corner or whatever it was. And I'd turn around and go, that's why I've paid my money, to watch that player play in that way. Because he's controlled the football, the way he used to, as I say, glide past players, and just a joy to watch. And yeah, I'd enjoy his performances more than the goals I score. I saw sometimes.
It's quite interesting.
True, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it is interesting take, actually, Steve, because you look, I read once, I don't know if it was on Soccer AM or I read it somewhere, that when he was training as a boy, he trained in a grid circle, a nine box grid, yeah. that was kind of like 6 foot by 6 foot, so he couldn't lose the ball. So that's why he learned the skills of, you know, whether it's six foot by 6 foot, or, you know, 6 meters, whatever it was. But it was a tight angle, so that actually he only had a real small space to be able to keep and control the ball in. So then when he got out on a bigger pitch, it was natural to him to be so controlled, and that was one of the reasons. But yeah, he was a wonderful player, absolutely wonderful player. Gutted that he left.
Who's your favourite striker?
Well, I've already said kind of legend of the game to be Harry Kane, haven't I? So I have to say Harry Kane. Oh, I want to mention a few. I think, I growing up in the era that we did, Gary Lineker for me was fantastic. I always remember, obviously, Italian 90, and being in and around that era with Gary coming to the football club. Then Jermaine Defoe. I mean, absolutely loved Defoe. When he left, I was gutted. When he came back, I was overjoyed. Berbatov, oh my God. I mean, some of the slick coolness that he did was outrageous, but again, left us for Manchester United. Teddy Sheringham, done the same thing, very similar, actually, player in a sense, you know, that could read the game, felt like 2 hours before anyone else, he just knew what to do. And of course, got to mention Robbie Keane as well, but it has to be Harry Kane. He is an absolute Tottenham through and through, so for me, it's Kane.
What's the first match you remember seeing?
I think it is that cup final that I mentioned earlier. It was the 87 cup final, Coventry 3-2. That is the memory that I have. I don't remember, nothing else sticks out. You know, if we had more time, maybe we could remember.
Late then, because you were I came to football late. I was 9 or 10. I was into, as I've said before, Shaking Stevens, and then I got into football after that, which...
Shaky, mate. Come on, talk to me about that green door.
My dad was all right, son, you want to play football? I was like, no, I'm going to dance to some Shaking Stevens songs.
Bit of shaking, mate. Yeah, I mean, I was late. It's interesting, actually. You know, when you think back on it, when was it? I talked about QPR thing and, you know, the Coventry City, Tottenham. That's where I got in Tottenham. My dad's a Wolves fan. He's a Wolves fan and Wanderers fan. Wow. So my dad's a bit of a sport nut. He's a milkman, right? So he'd done 42 years as a milkman. And, you know, he'd come home and be knackered because he'd work through the night. And then he'd sit on a Saturday afternoon, for example, and just sit in front of the telly and watch sport. And he'd watch anything going, cricket, rugby, blah, 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 which is probably where we get it from.
Sitcom, Bottle Boys.
I don't remember that, no.
Right, so it was the guy Asquith, who used to be on all those Confessions films back in the 70s.
Oh, right.
Do you know the guy?
I don't know, no. Sorry. I don't know.
Oh, boy, is that weird, the lark? All right, anyway.
keep singing. Yeah, so I mean, I don't know, you know, the first football match. I think I did come late to football. My first ever live football match was actually an England game. We played at Wembley. We played Uruguay. We lost 3-1, which was classic Spurs, even though we were England. But yeah, that was my first. And I must have been maybe 10 and maybe 11. So it must have been that season when I really started to get into the football. So I'd say it was 87.
What football match has made you cry?
Oh, Ajax, 100%. Ajax, 1,000,000%. I mean, it's the first thing that comes to my head.
Tell us where you were, and I want to know whether it was wobbly lip or full-on tears.
Perfect. Okay, so let me set the scene for you and the listeners, right? So we debated for a while if we were going to go to Ajax. You know, we're all season ticket holders. The six of us all season ticket holders. Various different points totals in the season ticket. So, you know, as you all know, if you ain't got enough points, then you can't get an away ticket and so forth. So we were a bit dubious if he was going to get an Ajax ticket or not. But we were adamant that actually if we get through past Man City, we're going to Amsterdam. Why wouldn't you? You know, a few days in Amsterdam, let's go. So obviously, we all know the drama that happened at Man City. Straight afterwards, we get on the blow to each other. We go and book the flights. We're going. So we booked the flights to go over to Ajax, and there was five of us. One of our guys couldn't make it, but there was five of us that went over there. And we were debating, do we go on the kind of hunt for some tickets and all that sort of stuff, or just do we go with the flow? And in the end, we said, look, if one or two of us get a ticket and go to the stadium, it kind of take it away from the whole group. So you know what we're going to do is we're going to watch it in a pub all together. And that's what we did. And we went to, I can't remember the pub's name now, which is so bad, I should remember in a minute. we'd been out in Amsterdam, had a few lunches, few beers, what you do in Amsterdam, and obviously kickoff was coming. We found this pub, we went in, it started to get a bit busy, it kicked off, and obviously you know how the game went, so we're trudging in at half time thinking, mate, what is the point in this? It's classic Tottenham, don't concede early, and the first thing is we concede what for 8 minutes or whatever it was to a lit header, and you just think, oh, we're done, and then they go 2-0 up, and you just think this is ridiculous. But you know, spirits were high. The pub was full of Tottenham. It was, you know, it was absolutely brilliant. Great atmosphere, whatever. But we're losing. We're just thinking whatever. When Lucas pops up and scores that the first one, we're thinking, oh, hello. You know, everyone was thinking, you know, yeah, it was a bit far, but you know, hello. And I'd worn weren't Tottenham shirt, but I wore Tottenham colours. So I had like a white polo shirt on, you know, and shorts or whatever in the Dan. And by the time Lucas popped up and scored the second one, all of us are thinking, oh, hello, you know, I think it was 20 minutes to go, whatever there was, wasn't there at that point? And, you know, Jan hit the bar, didn't he, at the beginning, at the end of the first half. At the 85th minute, sorry. And we're thinking, oh, that was our chance. The pub's going mad, we're singing songs, you know, there's beer flying everywhere, it's great, fantastic. And then, of course, when Lucas scored the winner, that ended up putting us through, we were just, it was absolutely uncontrollable. I mean, I've still got stains on the back of my white polo shirt, which is why I brought it up, of people's feet, so footprints, because people were like jumping on me, they're on my shoulders, the place went absolute carnage, and we were just sitting there, like we were just standing in this carnage thinking, oh my, I can't believe this has just happened. We went out to the square and that's when it hit, and it was just uncontrollable tears. It wasn't bottom lip, mate, it was uncontrollable. I was just absolutely sobbing, and my mate was sobbing, and we're hugging, and we're just like, I can't believe it. And our boys are there, and we're singing songs, and then and we're phoning home. You know, you phone your wives or your girlfriends or your partners, whatever, and probably thinking, oh no, what's going on here? And we're like, we've got through, we won, and you just want to share it with the people that you love. And it was
absolutely
phenomenal. Yeah, all of them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they've all been phoned. They were fine. One was on the WhatsApp. But yeah, no. So it was uncontrollable, Steve. To be fair, and it was the best feeling, because that doesn't happen to Tottenham. That happens to Liverpool, like we saw the night before, right? Barcelona. That happens to Man United in the 99 final, whatever. That don't happen to Spurs, and it did that night, and it was absolutely phenomenal. I'm getting tingles now just thinking about it. It was superb.
And we need to make it clear that it doesn't just happen to. I mean, it happened to us in the Man City game. It happened to us in the Ajax game. It didn't happen to us in the Liverpool game, but. All these teams that have won multiple tournaments and competitions over the last few years, that it happens in every round. It really does. And for us Spurs fans, we're unaware of that. We're unaware of the luck that these teams get. And this is what I'm saying about all these other teams. They go, oh yeah, no one wins a cup because they beat that team, that team, that team, that team, and then they won the final and that's it. I mean, the luck they have along the way. And, you know, we've had it, if you like, twice. In the Man City game and the Ajax game.
That just happened to be in the same run, didn't it?
Twice in the last 12 years. So, you know, we need to have, what these other teams get, you know, 10, 12 lucky games, massive referee decisions, massive, injury things that happen to other teams. You know, the number of times when we've played a massive games and we've lost our best player all of a sudden. Yeah, Harry Kane in the final. He's not twice,
two seasons on the trot. You know what I mean? He's out at the same period. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think you're right about that luck piece as well. But I also think that, you know, it is a learning curve. And I know some of the listeners won't want to listen to this, but, you know, in order for you to be great, in whatever you do, you have to go through poor times. You have to go through barren times. You have to go through pain. You have to. That is the learning process of what we do.
They lost against Real Madrid, so they beat us.
Exactly the point. You've absolutely nailed on the head. Liverpool's journey wasn't complete when they lost to Real Madrid. Liverpool's journey was complete when they beat Tottenham. And they beat Tottenham one of the reasons may well have been they beat Tottenham because they lost to Real Madrid. That's the learning curve. They'd all been there. They'd all been in the final. They all knew what the emotion was like. You know, they'd been in semi-finals. They've won the European Cup 6 times, for crying out loud. You know, that's the point I was making about the semi-final with Tottenham. The way we celebrated that semi-final as players, as coaching staff, was that was our completeness. You know, it was always very hard to get, but not to get up for the final. I'm not saying no one was motivated, but it was a subliminal message to say, wow, well, I think we've just reached the top of the mountain. You know, maybe we didn't have anything left, but to be able to come back again like Liverpool did, that is outrageous champions. That is, you know, fair play, respect to them be able to come back and do what they did in the league last year and lose it, and then win the Champions League after losing it the year before and now walk in the league this year. You know, think about the mentality and the winning state of mind that they've got as a group, as a focus. And that's the bit for me that we've, as Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, we've missed. We've missed that bit. And again, I think you called it right earlier, Steve. You said even when we're winning trophies in the 80s, we'd still lose on a Saturday in the league, but then we'd win on the Wednesday and we'd go and win a cup. I mean, I actually tweeted out, today's the anniversary since today's the day, on this very day, that Gary Mabbott picked up the FA Cup in 1991. And you look at that and you think, wow, that's madness that we haven't won it for, you know, whatever the math is, 29 years or whatever. But we were the 8 times winners during, you know, 29 years ago today, 8 times, we were a record. It was another record that Tottenham got. Now we've got Arsenal in front of us 13 times, Man United in front of us 12 times, Chelsea have drawn level with us 8 times. We haven't won them trophies, but you think about, you know, the winning mentality that has to come into the squad. That's not, I'm not having a go at any of the players, I'm not having a pop at any player. What I'm saying is that it's that belief for us as a fan base to say, we can go and win. But our way, almost, as Tottenham fans, coming back to the Spursy comments, is, well, that's Tottenham, isn't it? That's what we always do. We get to a point and then we can't finish it off.
Right, so what is the worst football match you've ever seen?
Easy. Wigan at home, 1-0 defeat, AVB in charge, obviously at the old White Hart Lane. Absolutely woeful. It was the backward sideways passing. There was no incisiveness in that team at the time. I think that, you know, AVB, when you look at AVB's record, actually, it's actually pretty good from a percentage perspective. But that game in particular was utterly woeful. It was a time where I actually looked to Nick and Coles and went, I'm not sure I can come anymore. It was woeful. And, you know, that Wigan side was diabolical and we should have absolutely ripped him a new one. And we lost 1-0. And again, classic Spurs. But, you know, it was the worst game I've seen live. Awful.
Have you been at a match and it scared you?
Yeah, actually. I went to Loftus Road in the away end. And for those of you who have been in the away end at Loftus Road, I don't know what it's like now, but you obviously it was standing back then. It was obviously QPR Tottenham. We were supporting Tottenham. And I stood in front of, it wasn't like a cage, but it was like a pole barrier. You know, like a barrier, but it was like a big, like a pole. And they used to have there. And I thought, I tell you what, it's the first time game or second time I've been standing in a game. I'll stand there because at least I can kind of lean, like on the pole. Well, that was ridiculous because we scored. And my word, the entire stand just pushed down towards the pitch when we scored. And I felt myself not being crushed. I'm not saying I was being crushed, but I felt myself like trying to push everyone back off because the pole was going into my midriff. So that was pretty scary, to be fair. Yeah.
Wow. And what about a player that over the years people have said he's rubbish, but you're like, no, I quite like him? So what player have you had to defend over the years, but everyone says he's rubbish, but you're like, no, he's all right, I like him?
Well, have you got 30 minutes to talk about Kyle Walker? Touché, because that for me, I mean, Kyle Walker, you know, I don't know why. He's maybe because he wears number, he wore number 28. He played right back. You know, for me, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of polar opinion on Kyle Walker. Was he good enough? Was he not good enough? Couldn't cross the ball, that sort of stuff. So maybe him. But another player might be, you know, again, some like a Harry Winks almost right now. Again, somebody who's one of our own, has come through the academy. He bleeds Tottenham. He's a very, very good player. I think he's actually really underrated. And some people will part, you know, put the aspersion on him that he's a backward sideways footballer. And I actually don't think he is. I think he's, I think he can learn because he's still young, but he can learn to really control the game in that midfield. So for maybe Harry Winks, but certainly Kyle Walker.
Have you worked out your starting 11 if we restart?
Oh, that's brilliant. I love this stuff. I mean, I don't know if it's really juvenile or not, like if people still do it, but you know, if I'm on a, like a long conference call, not that any of my clients should hear this, by the way, but if I'm on a long conference call or whatever, and I'm leaving my back of my pad, it tends to end up being what our starting 11 should be on a Saturday. So I've got quite a lot of like little starting 11s.
And on your pad, do you do it in formation or do you do 1 to 11 or?
No, 100% formation, 100%. Yeah, I'm looking at the little doodles now. So going through, it'd be interesting to get your views on it as well. Is, you know, if the Premier League was to restart tomorrow, I would probably go with Lloris in goal.
What formation are we doing?
I'd probably, with the personnel that we've got right now at the football club, I'd probably go 4-3-3.
Well, let's do 4-3-3 and we'll see if we agree. Go on.
Okay, so Lloris in goal.
Yeah.
And then I would play, this might be controversial, but I'd play Jafet Tanganga on the right as a right back.
Yeah.
And I'd play Ben Davis as a left back. And I'd play Toby Alderweireld and Davinson Sanchez in the middle.
The only difference for me is Jan.
Well, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I absolutely love Jan. I think Jan's quality, but I think that Sanchez just offers a bit more pace now going backwards. I think because our next game's Man United, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, it's similar to that. I mean, I think with the Jafet Tanganga piece, people will be screaming at me. I mean, I read a piece good friend of the Last One on Spurs show, actually, Alistair Gold, and he talked about, you know, the amount of assists that Serge Aurier has got, and it's actually quite impressive. But you just can't trust the guy defending. I just think Jafet could be Jose Mourinho's new Ivanovic. Yeah. You know, so that's why I put him in there. And then if we're going to 4-3-3, I would have Tungon Dembele with Giovanni Lo Celso, and then somebody holding. Now that holding person probably would be. Probably right now would be Winks. So I would go Winks.
But okay.
Okay, oh, Sissoko, I forgot. See, that's good. I forgot about Sissoko. I would probably put Sissoko in there. And actually, can I just ask you a question, Steve? Do you think that Mourinho will deploy Sissoko as a central holding midfield player?
Yeah, because I think that in the first couple of games, he didn't play him, if you remember rightly. And then he played him, and he was terrific. And people have forgotten how good Sissoko has been in the last couple of years. Started off not very well, but last year I voted for him for Player of the Year. Sonny won it.
So did I. I voted for him as well.
Should have been Sissoko.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I can't believe I just done what you just said that everyone's doing. Just forgot how good Sissoko was because he's been out for such a long time. Mm. I did forget. So I would have him as a holding midfield. I mean, the power, the pace, the ability to get back, take tackles and that sort of stuff. So yeah, so Sissoko and then Ndombele and Lo Celso for me. Okay. Would you have Ndombele and Lo Celso?
I think I have got Ndombele in my starting 11. Yes, I think I have, because I'm just thinking, you know, it's now or never. Come on, mate.
He's going to be world class, mate. He's going to be world class. There's absolutely no doubt about it. You listen to Jamie on our pod regularly, as we talked about before, and he absolutely loves him as well. And he is going to be world class if
you've got him in, if you like, instead of Winks.
Yes, because okay. I would have had Winks in, but I take your point as Sissoko, so I'm happy to change that around. But Lo Celso, we're both happy with that.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And then I suppose the front three will pick itself, really. I've had maybe on the right-hand side, we've got Sonny and Kane. And then on the right, what we've got here, we've got a Dele Alli. We've got a Steven Bergwijn, as I call him, because I can't pronounce his name. Or we've got a Lucas. So we've got options there. For me, I would probably go with Dele Alli. I think Dele Alli needs to get in with Kane. But in a 4-3-3, it's harder to get Dele in in a 4-2-3-1, it's easier to get Dele in, but I'll still probably go with Dele, even though he's not a winger.
Which means that on the bench, you've got Winks, you've got Bergwijn, you've got Lamella, you've got Lucas.
I mean, we've got a lot. We've got Dier, you've got Jan Vertonghen, because, you know, depending if you put in or Sanchez.
Yeah,
you've got Sessegnon. You've got Sessegnon. I mean, not really funny. You've got Skip as well in there, if you want to bring on a defensive midfielder as a youngster. Not being funny, you've got creativity there, you've got goals there, you've got pace there, you've got power. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, when you look at that team or that squad, there is obviously improvements to be made. I don't want this break to have blinded us. We were defending abysmally before the break, but when you look at that squad and can Jose Mourinho, one of the top three, maybe top five coaches in the world ever, can he get a tune out of that lot? I mean, come on. Seriously, he must be able to, mustn't he? What do you think? I mean, that's a brilliant set of players.
I also think
Jensen, you've got Fernandez, isn't you? Yeah. Jensen, I didn't even mention him.
Of course. Right, but I also think that almost like you said about the whole situation that we're in, they're playing behind closed doors. It's almost like the best team should really win. And I think that always, like Tottenham, have had this whole... like the crowd against them, or playing away when our away support is fantastic, but the home support of the opposition is always so fantastic, whereas our home support has never been that good. And forget about the current stadium, I'm talking about White Hart Lane. The last two seasons were fantastic when we were playing well, but the previous 18 seasons when I watched them, it wasn't that good. I just think that we might well do well, you know, if we do play behind closed doors. With that team and those subs, I mean, surely we'll be all right, won't we?
That's the thing. I mean, you look at Gazzaniga as well. You know, I'm a big fan of Gazzaniga. To be fair, I'm not saying he should be number one, but he's a good backup goalkeeper. And you look at him to come in behind Hugo. You know, you've got Aurier to come in behind Tanganga, or Tanganga to play as a centre-back. You know, look at centre-backs. You've got Dier, you've got Jan Vertonghen, you've got Sanchez, you've got Alderweireld. Forrest still at the club as well. I mean, Juan Poit could actually play central defensive midfield player. You know what I mean? You've got Sessegnon, and you've got Davis. You know that Jose will play with a flat back four, with one bombing and one coming in to make a three. You know, Davis coming in to make a three means that the right sided defensive, the right back, sorry, can actually bomb forward. And that's probably why he likes Aurier. So you can relinquish Aurier almost of his defensive duties if you've got a holding midfield player that can actually drop in as well. I think that's why the 4-2-3-1 formation under the Poch era worked so well. When we had a Wanyama and a Dier, or a combination, or a Dier and a Dembele combination, and one or two of our fullbacks would get forward at the time, would be Kyle Walker and or Danny Rose, or Trippier and Danny Rose, they would bomb forward, Dier would just drop in and make a three at the back. And it was a really good system to be able to move and a fluid system in game, so you could really change it. And we've got attacking options. I mean, I think our fullbacks have needed to be upgraded for a long period of time. Again, Ricky talked about Ricky before, but he always talked about our fullbacks need to be upgraded. You know, that season of Danny Rose on the left and Kyle Walker on the right, I think it was the Leicester season, wasn't it, before Kyle made his move, and they were sensational. Both of them fullbacks were outrageously good, and we missed that. So we haven't replaced Moussa Dembélé, and we talked about him on this very show, didn't we, how good he actually was. And that's the bit of taking the game almost by the scruff and neck in the midfield to say we're not going to give the ball away. There's so many goals if you analyse, and I'm sure, you know, I don't want to bore everyone with my Anorak stuff, but if you analyse most of, if not all of the goals under Poch this season and under Jose this season of that we've given away, they've all been individual errors. Like majority of, not, I can't say all of them, I'd say 85% of them are individual errors, Steve. But you just can't legislate for that. You set up, you train, you do what you do, individual error. There's a slip, or, you know, somebody loses his mount, ball goes over his head, bounces awkwardly, you know, gets pushed out of the way by Traore, whatever it is. You know, the individual errors that you can't wait for. And I think that's what's got to get out of our game. And actually, if you look at the league table, our goals for column is actually quite high. I think we're joint fourth for the top five goal scorers in the league, which is a kind of about right for where we are. It's the amount of goals that we're conceding is the issue. And, you know, when you think about, we've had Sonny out for a period of time, we've had Kane out for a period of time, Bergwijn got injured just before the break as well. Everybody's on Dele Alli's back for not scoring or whatever, although he's got the same amount of goals and assists as Kevin De Bruyne this year. Goals haven't been the issue. It's the defence that's been the problem. And that's the bit that Jose's got to sort out for me.
Come on, Jose. Boring Jose. Let's win games 1-0. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me that is the balance. And again, some people, there needs to be that balance there, and Spurs have a way of playing. But at the end of the day, if we can look, the Jose Mourinho stats speak for themselves. I think Chelsea conceded something like 34-35 goals the year, even though they finished second, and I think they got to Champions League semi-final the year before Jose got there. The year Jose got there, they conceded 15 goals. But that is a massive increase. You look at Liverpool, the amount of goals that they conceded when Jurgen Klopp first got there. I mean, we were scoring for fun over the air at 4-1 at Wembley. And, you know, they were shipping goals left, right and centre. And he's shoring up their defence. Their attack hasn't changed, has it, really, for the last three, four seasons? No. They've, you know, Salah and Firmino and Mane, they've all been brilliant all of that period of time. But what's changed the most is their defence. The goalkeeper, Virgil van Dijk's come in, and they've sewn up all the goals at the back, so therefore they don't concede, and they've got the best defensive record in the Prem. That's why you win titles.
Yeah, and
it's absolutely critical. So I'm not saying play boring football, but I'm saying sort it out the back. You know, under Pochettino, when we 16-17 season, we had the best defensive record. We conceded 26 goals in the entire season. It was the best defensive record in the league, and we still didn't win the league. And, you know, that you could go back to classic Spurs. We had the best defence, we scored the most goals. We were never top. I don't think we was ever top that season. Yet we was in the title challenge with the best defensive record. We scored the most goals, had the best goal difference, yet we still lost. Classic Tottenham.
Right, final question. Aliens come down, they bump into you, and they say, "We have heard about this sport you play called football. What is this? What is football?" And you say, "Right, come and watch this." And you hand them a DVD, or you say, "Look at this on YouTube." What is the football match that you say, "Watch this. This is football"?
Ajax. It has to be Ajax away, doesn't it? Absolutely has to be Ajax away.
Well, of course,
because
it does. Of course it
is. That is the game that, you know, it just epitomises football. That is exactly why we all love it. It's exactly why we put ourselves through pain, ourselves to try and rebuy our season tickets, to put ourselves through the pain of going there, knowing that you might win, you might lose. It's the anticipation of what's going to happen. And Ajax, for me, had it all. It was an absolute steamer of a game. And that's what the aliens should be watching, mate.
Yeah. You're right. That is the correct answer. Right, mate. So there we are. Anything else you want to say about the current Spurs, Levy, where we're at with the whole coronavirus, whether we should be back, whether we shouldn't, Bundesliga? I don't know. What you got?
Yeah, I think just for me to summarise, I mean, I think it's been brilliant. So thanks ever so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. I've really enjoyed it. Going through the you know, some of the memories, really, and talking that through. I think for me, in terms of COVID-19 and coronavirus and what we've been through, I think, you know, what I think and what will happen are two different things. What I think should happen is that they shouldn't be playing football unless it can be played in a way that is football. I don't think it should be played behind closed doors. I don't think that's right. I think that what this period will do is it will hopefully show the game as a whole, you know, people that run the game, that the fans are the most important people in the game, alongside the welfare of the players. You know, that's a health and safety piece. I'll come on to that in a second. But in terms of the actual game, when there's no fans in the stadium, you really do notice that the game isn't the same. I think on the coronavirus side of things, and, you know, COVID-19 and health and safety, I think that, you know, if I'm being told that I shouldn't go to my office to work, even though my office is in kind of a building where no one else is going to be in type thing, and I'm going to be 2 meters away from everybody, how can they structure football being played when you have to mark each other at a corner? And like you mentioned, you know, with the Bundesliga, for example, you know, it's natural to want to high five somebody. It's natural to want to kind of grab someone or grapple with somebody. It's a contact sport. So I think that's going to be very, very hard. And I think that goes back to the players' welfare. You know, they're also human. And, you know, regardless of how much money they get paid or not, you know, no money can be put in front of you if your health is at risk. So for me, I don't think we should be going back. Do I think that we will go back? Yes, because it's money and it's Premier League and it's business and it's the economy and all of them things. So I do think that we will go back, and I think we'll probably go back by mid-June. You know, they've always had this date, I think June the 8th or June the 15th in their red, and I think that won't change now. Now Bundesliga's gone back. That's a big, big thing. You know, I think Italy have just announced that they're looking at a potential date of first week in June. And when you think of all of the horrendous issues that they had within their country, all of the deaths and all of the death toll and whatever it was in Italy, and now they're looking at going back, I can't believe that the Premier League would be that far behind, to be honest. I don't agree with it, but it is what it is. Will I watch Tottenham when we're on the telly? Of course I will. Of course I will. It's our club. And it wouldn't surprise me that we go back and we finish ninth. And it also wouldn't surprise me if we win every single game that we've got left after the reset button and we end up finishing the top four. Either scenario wouldn't surprise me, to be honest, Steve.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, we love football. We're desperate to see football. We're desperate to go to football, blah, blah, blah. I really wanted to come, I wanted to make the wrong decision and bring football back. I think it will be the wrong decision because of all that we've been taught, you know, unless you're conspiracy theorists and say you reckon you know better than the scientists, then fair enough. But in my opinion, from what the scientists have told us, we really need to hunker down. Same with schools, same with any business where you don't need to go in, you know, until this thing is gone or passed or whatever. And I'm only going by what the scientists tell us. Other than that, we can read newspapers, we can read people's opinions, and we can say, yeah, you know, the economy needs to come back. Of course it does. Children need to be educated. Of course they do. But, you know, are we...
It comes at a cost, doesn't it?
You know, yeah. Does it? Well, or does it or doesn't it?
Or does it? Yeah, exactly.
Who's
that's
right?
The point.
You know, so yeah, you have to go by majority and, you know, you can have your own opinions. But I just think that, you know, Troy Deeney isn't training today because his son's got bad, you know, breathing problems. Oh, my goodness. There's no way I'm going back to school if my son has got asthma or breathing problems.
It's not happening. I mean, I got three girls who are identical twins, and one of my twins, Lois, she's six, and she's got asthma. So there is no way if I'm a professional footballer and I'm going to have an element of risk to bring it back into my family so my little girl can actually get coronavirus. It's just no chance. Yeah. You know, my mother-in-law and my father-in-law have both got they're vulnerable, you know, in a sense of heart attacks and strokes in the last couple of years. My dad's just had cancer. He's just had bowel cancer that he's just got for his treatment form. So he's vulnerable. It's just, you know, and people have to understand that footballers are human beings. You know, they're not pieces of meat that we can just throw around just because they get paid 150 grand a week. You know, the reality of the situation is the same as us. And if I was in their situation, like you just said with Troy, the way I would go and play, you know, I want it back. I'm the same as you. I want it back. I want to watch football. I want to get the season done for all of them reasons. We love it. But you can't put health behind profit. You can't. But unfortunately, at some stage, that will be the decision that has to be made by the government, because you can't keep the country on lockdown indefinitely, because the economy will crash if it hasn't already. So it's a huge decision that they're going to be making. And, you know, the phased approach, for want of a better word, the test and trace program, hopefully it'll work. It's you know, it seems like it's going to be a brilliant idea and a brilliant program, and hopefully that'll work. And maybe that gives us that bit of ebb and flow. You know, some people are in, some people are out, and then we change them around a bit. But ultimately, from a footballing perspective, I just, I'm not sure whether football will ever be exactly the same, you know, again, which is a worry, because, you know, about atmospheres at football clubs and, you know, what the old Wild Hart Lane and, you know, the new lane and whatever, but, you know, a European night under lights at White Hart Lane, full house, 62,000 in that wall, singing your heart out. I mean, there's not much better atmospheres to be in. And are we ever going to see that in the next year? You know, because behind closed doors might be for another 12 months. We just don't know.
All right, matey. What we do know is that we are all Spurs. Whether you're on Twitter, Facebook, all the other things, listening to podcasts.
We all love
our Spurs, and we've all got our opinions. We're one big family.
And that's how it should be. And look, and I'll take a line out of Ricky's book where he always says, "Come on, you Spurs."
Come on, you Spurs. Cheers, Lee.
Top stuff, Steve. Thanks for having me, mate.
Thanks ever so much. Cheers, mate.
See you later. Bye now. Bye.